should bring you.
I think that it's okay. It's already here. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. This is my first time coming here to APHA, and very exciting. I'm the typical stereotype Asian woman who hates driving. So I had to drive from LA down to San Diego yesterday for 2 hours, and this is really worth it. The minute I walk into this conference, it's great. I'm looking forward to learning a lot from everyone. I'm going to talk about the health education materials development process here at HealthNet. Okay, I have no relationship to disclose. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge the following individuals for their contribution to this presentation: Ms. Nancy Wong-Vipak, Mr. Hua Su, Ms. Diana Carr, and Ms. Maria Ortega. Maria is here with us today, so it's great. I love to read and write, so I'm going to throw in a lot of different quotes throughout the slide presentation to help you stay awake, and also we can learn from the wisdom of the past people. A few words about addressing health disparity. We are here today to try to reduce culture and language barriers by producing low literacy materials. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about why we need low literacy materials. To begin, you know, like when we try to talk to patients, when we communicate to patients, study have shown that half of the patient forget what the provider has told them within 1 hour after they left the doctor's office. So, you know, when they have a document in their hand, it's really helpful to so that they can go back to it and they can share with someone. And if they have questions, they can ask providers. But we do have a low health literacy problems here in the United States. So let's look at the health literacy problems. I want to point out that literacy skill is a stronger predictor of health status than a range of other categories, including race, ethnicity, income, age, employment status, and educational level. What does this mean to us? This means that if you figure out the literacy skill of one person, it's a better predictor of that person's health status. A person with low health literacy skills means that they're most likely their health outcome is not very good. And let's look at the stats in the United States. Nearly half of all Americans, 90 million people, have difficulty understanding and acting upon health information. And I wanted to stress the last point. Over 300 studies conducted over the last 3 decades have found that there's a mismatch between the reading levels of the materials that we're giving to the patients and the reading skills of the intended audience. On the average, the usual commercial materials is at reading grade level 10, while 50% of the English-speaking Americans have reading level grade 8 or below. So you can see that there's already a big gap there. And let's look at the stats in California. Compounding with the problems of the the low health literacy issues for people who are English speaking. Here in California, because we have a large immigrant population, 39.5% of people do not speak English. We also face the same similar situation where we need to address the problems of this particular population. Okay, more findings. 60% did not understand a standard form informed consent. 43% did not understand the rights and responsibilities section of the Medicaid application. So you can see that we have a problem. What does this mean to us? More money spent, more resources wasted, and more poor health outcome. On the average, a person with low health literacy would have two longer hospital stays compared to someone with high health literacy. And also, studies have shown us that someone with lower health literacy actually spends 4 times higher healthcare costs compared to someone with high health literacy. So we understand that there's a problem, and what do we do? Our solution is really to make health information understandable by the population that we serve. And today, I'm going to talk about the process at HealthNet on how we're trying to achieve this goal. Okay, a few words about State Health Program. We follow guidelines by DHCS, Mr. MIB, and NCQA. We serve more than 500,000 Medi-Cal members statewide, and we provide over 1.5 million copies of materials to our members yearly. So we do have materials in different languages and covering more than 20 different topics at HealthNet. And I just wanted to add that our surveys from members have shown that over 95% of members believe that our materials are considered excellent or better. So I'm going to talk about the process that we implement at HealthNet. I think I'm sure everybody here in their company have their own policy and procedures talking about health education materials development process. I try to simplify most process into this slide. There's basically three major phases that we go through each process, and the three major phases: content development, layout, production, and translation. And each phase will go through the creation, review, edit, and approval process. So it really depends on how you want to implement this process in your organizations. And using this template, you can fine-tune or design that customize your needs. When you have a good start, you are already halfway to final success. Okay, I want to emphasize that. It's important to plan ahead and so that you will have quality work. I'm going to start with content development. Content development is written by our health educator at HealthNet. So then we carefully study the target population and the topic, and we would create a draft ready to be reviewed. And before we do that, we always assess the reading level, and we have a requirement by the state that we would need to have the reading level at 6th grade or below. So that brings us to tip number one. We need to establish a review process with policy and procedure that includes specific standards, expected timeline, and steps, so it's easy to follow it for everyone. Okay. I know that everyone hates to read that policy and procedure, but it's important that you try to include as many details as possible so then people can use that as a reference and always, you know, follow that process. Here are some helpful resources for you. We use these websites to help us develop the content. Depending on the topic of the material that you would like to produce, these are some websites that would be very helpful. More websites, helpful resources. And this is a two website that you can use for readability assessment. You can copy and paste the content of your draft, and then this website will allow you to get the readability level for your material. Teamwork. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It's really important that we do this to produce the quality that we're looking for. So after the health educator finish the content of the material, it would need to be submitted to all these different departments internally, and also we need to submit it to DHCS, Department of Healthcare Services, if necessary, and plus the field testing. We actually try to conduct focus groups so that we can test our materials with the intended audience. That brings us to tip number two. Because we have all these reviews being done, you know, with the team, you need to have a tracking process so that you would be able to monitor and review the feedback that you get from the reviewers. And we do that through a health education material review form in health, at HealthNet. You can do that, you know, depending on your organization. You can set up a database or you can use a log to track these process. Okay. These are the criteria that we review for content. Again, I want to emphasize that you want to invest the time to edit and scrutinize a low literacy document from the start, and that's going to help you to have low literacy document by the time it gets to translation. Okay. After the review is done, and then the health educator would incorporate the edits and feedback, and then finally try to get the content approved and finalized. And then we move on to the layout production phase. Again, it's a creation, review, edit, and approval process. The layout is created by our marketing designer using a company style guide, and the layout is being reviewed by two internal departments and plus a field test if possible. A picture is worth a thousand words. So especially with low literacy population, a picture is always very helpful if you try to convey your message. And this is the few criteria that we're looking for when we do the layout review. We want to make sure that you have enough amount of white space, the use of image is appropriate, even the color. I know that for the Chinese population, the red is always associated with happy events. So if you have like a serious topic, you do not want to use the color red. And that brings us to tip number four. You want to communicate your needs to your layout team before the layout is created and make sure, you know, it's appealing, the layout, the look of the material is appealing to the target population. And finally, translation. By the time the English content and the material is finalized, and we can send it to the translation process for translation to take place. And currently at HealthNet, we have two vendors that we use for translation. And the Culture and Linguistics Services Department coordinates that translation and translation review process. Want to share the tip with everyone is that you need to, you want to work with your vendor closely. So you want to know your target language and the preferred format of translation. That means, you know, the language that you want to tell them beforehand. For example, the Spanish spoken in Argentina is different from the Spanish spoken in Mexico. So you want to convey all this information to the vendor so that it will save you time and money to go through that translation. And the preferred format of translation, the same thing. We have a format of transcreation, which means that they will use the everyday language versus a literal translation where they just translate the English word by word. So you would let them know beforehand. That would help you. The translation process, actually, once we get the translation back from the vendor, then we go through the translation review process. Within HealthNet, we have a translation review team where we have reviewers using bilingual staff to review the document to make sure it's consistent with the English content. And that brings us to tip number six. You want to work with your translation vendor and to create a style guide and glossary to save money. The style guide actually is the tone of voice or the format that you would like to see on your translation. And the glossary is a set of vocabularies that you often use in your materials. For example, for HealthNet, we use a lot of words such as like providers, benefit, provider groups, things like these. If you put that in the glossary, that would save them time, you know, for translation. And finally, you know, we would get the feedback from the translation reviewers and communicate with the vendor and make sure the translation is of high quality. And tip number seven is avoid using unqualified bilingual staff to produce or advise on translation quality. So all the edits are done by the vendor. And that concludes the process that we have for the materials development. Just one last thing, you wanted to continue to improve your material review and development process, so then it's always good to have surveys being done and field tests and group needs assessment being done to really evaluate how well your materials are received by the target audience. So tip number A, the last tip, is to ask for feedback from your target audience. And if you have any questions, you can email me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. Next, we'll hear from Edna Rivera Carrasco. She is the director of programs for a small nonprofit minority-run agency. Mrs. Carrasco has over 14 years grassroots experience in working with public housing tenants on social and environmental justice issues.